Isn't it crazy that America is turning 250 years old? I mean, look how far we've come. Now, we've got coolers in our sofas, light-up cup holders, and power-articulating headrests. When it comes to furniture worthy of this major milestone, Bob's Discount Furniture has all the styles all of America wants at the everyday low prices we deserve, backed by tons of five-star reviews. Check out the Sedona Power Reclining Sofa, a genuine leather one-stop shop for relaxation with built-in charging, cup holders, and supportive bobopedic seats, perfect for lounging in the AC all day. You can even complete the look with the matching love seat and recliner. Throwing summer parties? The HomeWorks dining set features comfy bobopedic seating and clever storage built right into the table and bench. Or customize your space with the customer favorite modular Bob Sectional. It has over 1,000 five-star reviews, family-proof construction, and wireless charging for hundreds less than the competition. At only $250 per piece, building your dream sectional is incredibly affordable. Celebrate the 4th at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Before diving into this episode, make sure to listen to UNC parts 1 and 2. This one picks up right where we left off. The email took me by surprise. It landed in my inbox just as we were wrapping up the UNC story. The sender was Holden Thorpe, the former chancellor of UNC. He was the guy in charge when the university faced one of the worst athletic scandals in the history of college sports. To refresh your memory, the scandal involved hundreds of fake classes created to keep athletes eligible. I'd reached out to Thorpe for an interview, expecting to hear nothing back. But then, there it was in my inbox. "Does this come with free Xanax?" he joked. Then he said, "JK, when would you like to do this?"
"Okay, testing 1, 2, 3. This is Holden Thorpe."
I'm Margot Gray. This week on Campus Files, we explore what it was like to navigate one of the most tumultuous periods in UNC's history. What did Holden Thorpe really know? What would he do differently if given the chance? And can any university president manage the monstrosity that college athletics have become? Before we dive into Holden Thorpe's tenure as UNC chancellor, I want to give you a little background. Because Thorpe isn't just the former head of UNC. He's a lifelong fan. And his connection to the university runs deep.
"My father and his father and all my father's brothers and lots of people on my father's side of the family went to UNC Chapel Hill. And so I was raised with Carolina Blue stuff all around and with all the legends and folklore of UNC Chapel Hill."
When Thorpe couldn't sleep as a kid, his dad would try to lull him to rest by singing Hark the Sound, UNC's alma mater.
I went there for the first time when I was 6 years old to go to the Morehead Planetarium, which I eventually ended up running. And I went to football games and all that kind of stuff when I was a kid and was a diehard Carolina basketball fan long before I ended up being in charge of it.
So when it came time for college, it was only fitting that he applied to just one university, UNC.
I went to Chapel Hill as a freshman right after UNC had won the 82 championship. So Michael Jordan played for UNC for 2 years while I was an undergraduate, and it was really the beginning of the golden years of UNC basketball.
When Thorpe wasn't busy cheering on the Tar Heels, he was likely either playing jazz or working in the chemistry lab.
Like a lot of young kids from medium-sized towns like mine, it was Fayetteville, North Carolina, I thought I wanted to be a physician. So I became a chemistry major because that was most of the requirements for pre-med, but I changed my mind at the last second to get a PhD in chemistry instead of going to medical school.
And so began Thorpe's lifetime in academia. He earned a doctorate in chemistry from Caltech and completed his postdoctoral work at Yale. His first teaching position was at NC State University, but it didn't take long before he was back at his alma mater. In 1993, Thorpe returned to UNC, where he quickly rose from visiting assistant professor to tenured professor. In addition to being promoted within the chemistry department, you're very quickly tapped for all sorts of administrative roles outside the chemistry lab. Director of the planetarium, chemistry department chair, dean of the College of Arts and Sciences. Why do you think you were seen as a good fit for these roles?
I mean, I'm somebody who is very focused on getting things done. I've since come out as being autistic. I'm very task-oriented. I'm very literal. If there's a problem to be solved, I want to get it solved.
In 2007, when the role of chancellor opened up, the UNC Board of Trustees quickly singled out Thorpe as a top candidate. The chancellor is the highest-ranking official at the university, essentially combining the roles of CEO, community leader, and athletic director all in one.
At the time of your interview, you were serving as dean, which is a role that's really focused on overseeing academics. But university chancellor, on the other hand, oversees all aspects of the institution, including athletics. I'm curious how much athletics came up during your interviews.
Yeah, that's a great question. When I was interviewing for the job, there was one question about athletics, and I said some weepy-eyed things about Carolina basketball and how much I loved it, and I just got all the alumni all misty-eyed about the Carolina Blue and all that stuff, and that was the last they asked me.
And at the time, what did you know about the inner workings of the athletic department?
I mean, I knew about going to the games and stuff, but I knew next to nothing about how athletics really worked. And we had an experienced athletic director, and you have to remember that there was nowhere near their mind that we could have some kind of big scandal either.
UNC hadn't dealt with a sports scandal in decades. Its record with the NCAA was spotless. So when it came time to select a new chancellor, no one saw the need to prioritize experience in athletics. Besides, whatever Holden Thorpe lacked in that area, he more than made up for elsewhere. He was a Fayetteville native, UNC graduate, lifelong Carolina sports fan, beloved professor, and renowned academic.
And also, I had a lot of connections in Democratic politics. And it was a time when North Carolina was the unusual southern state in that it hadn't gone red. And so the leaders of Democratic politics in North Carolina were incredibly powerful. And one of the most powerful ones was my father's law partner. And so all of those things, I think, added up to me being the person then picked for that job.
This was news to me, just how much political connections influenced the selection of university leaders. It's especially true at public universities like UNC that rely on taxpayer dollars.
There's no way I would have become the chancellor at UNC at age 43 if it hadn't been for that. So all of those things, I think, added up to me being the person picked for that job.
Thank you. This is an incredible day for my family and me. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to lead the best university in the world.
Thank you.
At just 43, Thorpe was one of the youngest chancellors ever in UNC history.
I think looking back, I definitely could have used a few more years in the administration. A lot changed after I got picked for that job. We had the 2008 financial crisis. The Republicans won the 2010 election and flipped North Carolina red, and we got an athletics crisis.
And not just any athletics crisis, but one of the biggest scandals to ever rock college sports.
You know, I've had good timing in my career and I've had bad timing. Becoming the chancellor of UNC Chapel Hill in 2008, that was just bad luck.
June is here, which means it's finally time to reach for your summer wardrobe. And if you're trying to look good without overheating, Quince is your best bet. Their summer collection has all the warm weather staples: breathable linen, washable silk, and soft organic cotton. I now own their 100% linen pants in more colors than I'd like to admit. And the best part is that you get all that quality without the luxury markup. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a destination for elevated essentials across the home, from kitchen to bedding, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/campus for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/campus for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/campus.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
At the start of Holden Thorpe's chancellorship, UNC was riding high. In 2009, during his first full academic year as chancellor, the men's basketball team clinched the national championship.
Welcome to the White House, everybody.
Then President Barack Obama honored the championship team at the White House.
It's fifth national championship. And more importantly, thanks for salvaging my bracket.
Whether Obama meant to or not, his remarks touched on the Carolina way, the philosophy popularized under legendary coach Dean Smith. It's the belief that UNC excels not only on the court, but off of it as well. And it's a belief that endured at UNC long after Smith's tenure.
I know Coach Williams instills the importance of academics into all these guys. And what they understood is that being a champion doesn't stop when you step off the court.
So at this point in your chancellorship, would you have described yourself as a believer in the Carolina Way philosophy?
Oh, yeah. I was raised on that philosophy. And so while I have great admiration for Dean Smith and what he accomplished, he did manage to convince people that they didn't need to look too closely at how it all worked by coming up with this whole Carolina Way idea. So that made it all the more difficult when I figured out it, there wasn't as much to it as everybody thought.
The first crack in the Carolina Way came in May 2010, when a football player tweeted about getting bottle service at a Miami nightclub. For the first time since 1961, NCAA investigators were heading to Chapel Hill. Initially, Thorpe thought the scandal might be manageable. It looked like a handful of players had accepted outside payments, but things quickly escalated. Thorpe soon learned that a tutor had been writing papers for football players, meaning this was now a case of academic fraud and a direct threat to the Carolina Way.
After 50 years of bragging about how we did athletics a different way, that was a cataclysmic event for the University of North Carolina, where I had to somehow go to Tar Heel Nation and tell them that the Carolina Way was dying because we were suddenly in all this trouble.
On August 26, 2010, Thorpe held a last-minute press conference to break the news to the university. Wearing a Carolina blue tie, he told the crowd, "To everyone who loves this university, I'm sorry about what I have to tell you."
And for a nerdy autistic guy who doesn't know how to work rooms, who's used to solving problems that have an analytical solution, that was one hell of a challenge.
In an effort to show that the university was taking the scandal seriously, Thorpe suspended 12 football players from the opening game against LSU. While the team battled it out on the field, Thorpe spent that game lying on the floor of his box.
If we were LSU, we would have played everybody and told the NCAA to go away. And so there was this huge burden on me for deciding to pull all those guys. So the weight of all of the drama of that, yeah, I could barely stand up.
But the drama was only beginning to unfold. This was the moment when Dan Kane, the News and Observer reporter we heard from last episode, uncovered trouble in the AFAM department. He published a story revealing that a football player had taken a senior-level AFAM course before his freshman year and earned a good grade in the class. Thorpe had a bad feeling.
I called over to the public records officer and I said, "Get the roster for that class." And she gets it and she starts reading the names off of the roll. And it's a who's who of Carolina athletics. And every name she read off, my soul just got crushed because I knew that as soon as she read that roll off, that this thing was a whole lot worse than I thought. I thought we just had a bad tutor who was writing people's papers for them. But once I got the roll of that first AFAM class, I knew we were in big trouble because it was apparent to me right that second what the scheme was.
I want to pause here for a moment. Thorpe is acknowledging that in August 2011, long before the university publicly admitted to the paper class scheme, and years before the investigations were concluded, he had a clear understanding of the scheme that had been taking place. He understood that the AFAM department was offering fake courses that never actually met and required no work. He understood that the primary purpose of the scheme was to keep athletes eligible, primarily basketball and football players, and he knew it had been going on for decades. Instead of coming clean about what he already knew, Thorpe chose to buy the university some time. He launched an internal investigation, a move he now describes as putting the problem on a credit card.
Because you're telling the media, "Oh, I'm not going to answer this until the report gets done." Well, that sounds pretty good while you're doing it, but the problem is credit cards have 18% interest. And so the longer you go on putting it on the credit card, the bigger the bill is when the report comes. My big mistake was not explaining to the world what I'd figured out about Carolina athletics sooner than I did.
I also think this first investigation was never going to be the final word because it only looked at the classes from 2007 to 2011. Why stop at 2007 when there were signs that the problem went back much further?
So yeah, of course, I knew it went back further than that. But the reason we did 2011 to 2007 was that that was what Dan had in his first public records request.
In other words, they only looked back as far as they had to. Dan Kane hadn't requested records from earlier decades, so they saw no reason to dig deeper. The problem with that strategy was that Dan Kane eventually figured out that the scandal went back much further, and his discovery unleashed another wave of bad headlines, tougher questions, and yet another investigation. This became a familiar pattern. Every time UNC tried to tell only part of the story or hide behind an investigation, the truth had a way of catching up with them and making things even worse.
So sitting here today, if you could go back to that moment, what would you have done differently?
It would have been best if I could have found a way to go to Tar Heel Nation and said, "Listen, everybody, I know this Carolina Way thing was really intoxicating to think that we were doing all this winning without being as corrupt as Alabama and Auburn and LSU and whoever you want to name, but we just weren't."
Breaking the news would not have been easy, particularly for Holden Thorpe, a lifelong Carolina fan who had not yet come to terms with the death of the Carolina Way himself.
If I could have found my way to realize it myself sooner and stop looking at the world through Carolina blue glasses, then that might have been better for everybody.
Instead, Thorpe spent the next year dodging questions from reporters and clinging desperately to the Carolina way. But even he knew he couldn't hold on forever.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
The easiest thing you'll ever do is keep your car serviced with Roda.
That's a real 5-star Google review from Diana S. And honestly, she nailed it. Roda is the DMV's most trusted auto shop. Maintenance, repairs, and detailing with free valet pickup and drop-off, no hidden fees and no pressure. Book in minutes at Roda.com and save 20% with code POD20. It's Roda. Duh.
On September 17th, 2012, Holden Thorpe announced he was resigning as chancellor of UNC. The final blow wasn't tied to athletics, but instead to a separate scandal, one involving university fundraisers using school funds for personal trips. As the Chronicle of Higher Education put it, it was death by a thousand cuts for Holden Thorpe.
Now, the mood on campus today has been vacillating between shock and surprise. Some people said they thought they saw this coming, but there's also been a lot of tears on campus today from faculty members, even from some of the students.
Thorpe's resignation was met with sadness on campus. The university's board of trustees urged him to reconsider, writing, "The UNC Chapel Hill Board of Trustees unanimously believes Carolina is better today because of him, and emphatically requests that Chancellor Thorpe reconsider his decision." But Thorpe had reached his limit.
So I believe when you broke the news to the faculty chair that you were resigning, you said it was because, quote, "they wore me down." Who exactly wore you down?
Yeah, that's something that's been badly interpreted, because the News and Observer wrote an editorial basically congratulating themselves for being the ones who wore me down. And I never thought that Dan King was doing anything other than his job. And while I disagreed with the News and Observer editorial board, they were writing what they had always written about college sports. No, the people who wore me down were the people on the other side, the sports fans and the sports trustees.
When Thorpe talks about sports trustees, he's referring to UNC board members with close ties to the athletic program. This group was a major headache for Thorpe throughout the scandal.
They were just constantly telling me, "Oh, why don't you just tell all these people to go away and ignore this and hire attorneys who can go fight it?"
Thorpe was stuck in the middle. Sports fans, on the one hand, blasted him for working with the NCAA, while journalists accused him of covering up the truth. But the main force shaping his decisions wasn't either group. It was the crisis management team around him. They influenced his every move.
These universities are so paralyzed about doing and saying the wrong thing that they're holed up. They're hiding behind their comms people and their attorneys and their reputation consultants.
The crisis management team held so much power, partly because Thorpe had no experience handling scandals. He's an academic, like most university leaders.
You get these jobs by convincing the board that you're going to build academic success and get more Rhodes scholarships and climb in the rankings and all that stuff. But you keep the jobs by managing all of the matters, as we used to call them, that come up. So do you take somebody who knows the academic side and teach them how to run all these things? Or do you take somebody who's an excellent general manager and try to get them to understand the intricacies of academia? Nobody's really solved that problem.
In other words, there's often a disconnect between the skill sets of college presidents and the actual demands of the role. Thorpe experienced this firsthand during the athletic scandal. Despite having no background in college sports, he was tasked with leading the institution through the crisis. Thorpe writes about this disconnect in a recent article for the Chronicle of Higher Education, titled, "Where Does the College Presidency Go From Here? The job is increasingly untenable. Change is needed."
The universities are way too complicated. They're trying to do too many different things. And so that's where the problem comes from. And while you're running a sports entertainment enterprise and a hotel and a fire department and a police department and, you know, all these things that these universities are doing, most of which are distractions from research and teaching. So that's the problem. Now, unfortunately, that's a genie that's very hard to put back in the bottle.
Even with his concerns about university leadership, Thorpe took on another administrative role. In July 2013, he became provost at Washington University in St. Louis. From this new position, far from Chapel Hill, he watched as the ticking time bomb at UNC finally went off. In 2014, former FBI General Counsel Kenneth Weinstein completed his investigation into UNC's academic misconduct and released an explosive tell-all report.
The University of North Carolina today reeling from a blow, a really big blow to its reputation. An eight-month investigation found thousands of UNC athletes remained eligible to play by taking fake classes that fraudulently boosted their grades.
And was there anything in the report that Weinstein discovered that was at all shocking or surprising to you?
As far as the story, no, nothing in there was surprising to me. I had talked to him at length. Actually, he brought his daughter to tour WashU like the week the report came out. And so the two of us had a long dinner 3 or 4 days after the report came out, talking about everything that we'd both been through with the whole thing.
I would argue that the Weinstein report really put the nail in the coffin of the Carolina way, so to speak. How do you think Tar Heel fans reacted to this? You know, the realization that at the end of the day, they were maybe no better than the other schools, which had been cutting corners.
Most of our fans, once they were forced to choose between whether they cared more about winning or cared more about the Carolina way, turns out they cared more about winning.
When I asked him if prioritizing winning means UNC is still cutting corners to keep players eligible, Thorpe shared a telling anecdote.
When you go to hire a football coach, first thing they want to know is what's the admissions policy, because they don't want the admissions challenges to constrain them from winning. So when you're hiring a football coach or basketball or anybody else, you're telling them basically, look, the students have to succeed in our majors somehow. But you can recruit anybody you want. That's the lesson of all this, is that if you're going to compete in intercollegiate athletics, you're going to have these challenges. There's just too much in the system to stop it.
And would you say you place more blame on the system itself rather than on an individual like Debbie Crowder?
The people who gained from the AFAM scheme are the athletics department, the coaches, the administrators who had fewer problems to deal with because this was there. Those are the people, the powerful people in these transactions. Debbie Crowder and the athletes, they don't deserve any of the blame for this. They were people who were just disadvantaged by the money and power that was going to somebody else.
Thorpe noted that today, some of that money and power is shifting back to the athletes, thanks to a recent NCAA policy change. As of 2021, the introduction of name, image, and likeness rules, also known as NIL, has allowed college athletes to profit from their personal brands.
I mean, everything that we got nailed for in the extra benefits part of the case would be legal now. So maybe nobody would have ever found the ticking time bomb in AFAM. I'm very much in favor of NIL. When I saw how little money was involved in getting these athletes to take money that they weren't supposed to take, it just showed me how much they're exploited. You know, I remember we had one athlete who just wanted to get a free meal at the Cheesecake Factory. And so I have been on the side of giving the athletes more ever since that happened.
This makes Thorpe one of the very few current or former university leaders who have publicly supported NIL.
I know NIL is a huge complication for the athletic directors, but as far as I'm concerned, too bad. You guys go figure it out. You're making a lot of bank running these programs. These are people who've been doing the work of sports for all this time. And if they're finally going to get compensated for it, that's good. You go work it out.
Whatever Thorpe's thoughts on NIL or NCAA rules, he no longer has to concern himself with them. Today, he's come full circle back to where it all began, immersed once again in the world of science. He serves as the editor-in-chief of Science Magazine.
Okay, so I must admit, I have been waiting to ask, after everything that you dealt with, do you still tune in for Carolina games?
I do. You know, the hilarious thing is, I ended up being a big college football fan because once you learn that much about a game, it's much more enjoyable to watch it.
UNC's dedication to athletics is as strong as ever. Just take a look at their recent decision to sign Bill Belichick as their new head football coach.
A six-time champion, a football savant, without question the greatest today.
Belichick is a coaching legend with the second most career wins in NFL history.
The seats here at Keenan Stadium surely will be filled next season, and the university is banking on that to help the Tar Heels foot the bill for Belichick's multi-million dollar deal.
Over the next 5 years, UNC will guarantee Belichick $50 million, with more than $3 million annually in potential bonuses. Following Belichick's hire, UNC Chancellor Lee Roberts said, "Carolina is committed to excellence and to creating an opportunity to succeed in everything we do, from the classroom to the field of competition." Campus Files is an Odyssey original podcast. This episode was written and reported by Margot Gray. Campus Files is produced by Ian Mont, Elliot Adler, and me, Margot Gray. Our executive producers and story editors are Maddie Sprunkheiser and Lloyd Lockridge. Campus Files is edited, mixed, and mastered by Chris Basil and Andy Jaskowitz. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman, J.D. Crowley, Leah Reese-Dennis, Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Kurt Courtney, Hilary Schuff, Sean Cherry, Laura Berman, and Hilary Van Ornum. Original theme music by James Waterman and Davey Sumner. If you have tips or story ideas, write to us at campusfilespod@gmail.com.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.